It is Friday, November 9th. Let's talk PlayStation. So, starting off the news week, Sony quietly rolled out a new PS4 Pro model in the Red Dead Redemption 2 bundle, and it's a slight model revision, nothing major. Typically, when they do something like this, it's either a realignment of the internals in the system, maybe they try to achieve a lower power consumption. It might be a slight design change, but it's nothing major or significant. A good example is the original base PS4 had that glossy top finish. The next model revision after that, or I believe two model revisions after that, they went to a matte finish, so it's never anything major. Well, anyway, this new PS4 Pro is CUH 7200, and the big change here is actually the power input, so they go from the bulkier connector to the regular figure 8 connector that is actually used on a lot of PlayStations over the years, so that's actually pretty good, although the power consumption is apparently still the same. Also, it apparently is much quieter than the previous model and the launch model. Actually, PS4 Pro came out at CUH 7000, and then it went to 7100, and that lowered the power consumption and noise a little bit. So it's actually good that the system performs much quieter than, say, a launch PS4 Pro. There's always benefits to buying later on. This PS4 Pro is now probably going to take over most models once retail runs out of most of their current PS4 Pro stock. So if you remember, the original voice talent for Medieval on PlayStation, Jay Gunn, tweeted a while ago, before we got details about the fact that it's now a remake, he was tweeting, you know, sort of some teases about his work and involvement in the game. Well, he's tweeted a little further, elaborating on his involvement in the game, and sure enough, he is consulting with the game and actually providing the voice talent once again. He also confirmed Chris Sorrell, who was originally the creative director on the game. He's also doing consultation work as well. And he's reaffirming us that, well, the game is in good hands and it's turning out quite well. And that's great. I always just appreciate things like this because at times when you see a remake or a remaster, it's more often than not always handed off to a different studio for contract work. That's not uncommon. But it's always good to have original talent very close to the new project and making sure that it's as close to the material as possible. That's something that, for me personally, I always find very important when it comes to handling old work. I feel like you should always try and go out of your way to contact original talent and make sure that you're going about it in the best way possible and staying true to what the original content was. And that will be no different with Medieval, so that's great. Now, moving on to something a little bit more speculative, Diracine for PlayStation VR recently launched, and that's From Software's virtual reality game. But now that the game has been out for not even that long at all, we are finding a lot of references to Bloodborne in it, which is making a lot of people consider that possibly they are leaking, or not leaking, but teasing or implying that there could be a Bloodborne 2. And at various points in the game, you can find a doll that is making the make contact gesture, which is prominently from Bloodborne, and it has a description on it that is also very alluding to Bloodborne. It actually says, "A doll of the stone girl Fiona, who appears in the unfinished tale. When a person has a bad dream, Fiona appears and helps them flee." And then there's another one that says, "A statuette of a seafaring sage that appears in an unfinished tale. It is said to appear in bad dreams to watch over those who attempt to leave." Of course, the internet and gamers in general like to take a huge magnifying glass and really figure out what the hell is going on here, and it is with most certainty that these are references to Bloodborne because it's a From Software title. They made Bloodborne and Diracine, so yes, we've really kind of figured this one out here, but what does it really mean? Is this teasing a sequel? I think people are maybe being a little too hopeful. We've had rumors floating around for a while about Bloodborne 2 and if it's coming. And why are those rumors circulating? Is it because the game's in early production? Is it further along than we think? Is it actually happening at all? We don't really have anything super concrete at this point. So I think when it comes to Bloodborne 2 stuff, we really have nothing to go on. And this doesn't really add more fuel to that flame. So as of right now, I still think that there's really not much of anything going on. Of course, the game did really well for Sony in 2015. It did well with From Software. And it's Sony's IP. They could do another one if they wanted to and field it out to another developer. I don't think they're going to do that unless they can have From Software do it. From Software has also been open about the fact that they would do a Bloodborne 2 at some point down the road. I think it's a matter of when, not if, and that when would likely at this point be a PlayStation 5 game. You can't see this game coming out on PS4 at this point because it doesn't even exist yet, at least not to us. So probably 2021, 2022, who knows? It's probably pretty far out if we're going to get it anytime soon. Now, one thing that we can say with certainty is that PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds is probably coming to PS4 in December. And I say probably because we don't really know if it's going to be December. We're more speculating at this point because the evidence that we now have is pretty damning in terms of if this game is going to come to PlayStation, because it's certainly going to come to PlayStation at this point. We've actually found data on Sony's servers referencing information to PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. And not only that, but there's images of the game on Sony's server as well. So If that doesn't confirm it, I don't really know what does. Now, the game being available in December, that's a lot of speculation about the Game Awards and if it will be announced there, available on PS4 immediately. Some kind of news like that would be pretty cool and substantial at the Game Awards. The game did launch on Xbox's preview program last year in December, so if they did have some sort of deal where it was, let's say, a year of exclusivity, that would be up coming up in this year's December. So maybe we could see it there. At this point, though, looks like the game's certainly coming. If this doesn't prove it, I don't know what does. So, prolific video game voice actor Troy Baker was at the Argentina Game Show 2018 talking about Death Stranding, and he actually responded to a fan question. He had this interesting quote that I'd like to share with you all. He said, "Norman Reedus and I shot for about 2 weeks on it. He's super rad. He's really throwing his all into this game. He's got amazing work ethic. We had some interesting scenes together. It's a huge game. The scope of the game is huge. If you know anything about Hideo Kojima, he doesn't do small. It's weird and it's big. I was fascinated to know this, and I hope it's okay that I say this. He had the entire game in his head for like 2 years, some ridiculous amount of time. I may be wrong about the exact amount of time. He didn't write it down on any notes, just had it all in his head. If you ever wanted to ask him anything, he could tell you the exact fact. It's the same with Metal Gear. I've never been to work with someone who required more trust, because it's like you're going through it blind. And he assembled an incredible cast of people to pull off a fantastical game. It's trippy, it's weird, I have no idea when it's coming out. I believe I'm finished shooting, I think Norman's finished, but I could be wrong, I just want to play it." Now that is pretty telling, not only the fact that his work is done, and that doesn't tell us a whole lot because we don't know just how big of a role he really has in the game. He could be more of a minor character, and certainly he probably is more of a minor character, but for him to imply that Norman may also possibly be done, we know that Norman Reedus plays a much larger role in the game, that tells us this game could be pretty far along now, to the point where we could see it, not soon, but, you know, you could see this game get wrapped up within the next year and a half, 2 years, and that's why when we talk about that, this kind of puts us on this precipice of like, okay, is this game going to be PS4, or is it getting on the cusp of PlayStation 5? And I think a lot of people are now starting to maybe come to the conclusion that this could be a cross-generation title, or at the very least, it could launch late on PlayStation 4, and you could see the game a few months later after, say, the announcement and release of PlayStation 5, that the game gets ported to PS5 and it has a PS5 version that was being developed concurrently with the PS4 version. But of course, they can't talk about that, so they just released the PS4 version. This could go in so many different avenues, but it is that kind of game where it's getting on the cusp of being maybe a PS5 game. But to see that possibly Norman Reedus' involvement in the game is close to being done or wrapped up, at least the game's finally getting close to, you know, maybe there's a light at the end of the tunnel. So I wanted to bring this one up because of our previous Spyro Reignited Trilogy story and how you have to do a day one patch to download the remainder of the second and third games in that collection. Battlefield 5, when the game comes out, will have a day one patch, as is the case with most games. And that day one patch for Battlefield 5 is pretty significant. So apparently it's 139 pages of text that gives you the patch notes, and it's over 22,000 words, and that's a lot. It's some of the things are minor, like tweaks and things like that. Some are more major, like the introduction or deletion of certain items in the game, maybe certain assets. It's obviously a big patch, and it goes to show how commonplace this is, which is that you start printing the game a month and a half, maybe 2 month lead time of printing the disc, and the games are still being worked on. And it's just very commonplace. But it's almost to the point where, especially a game like Battlefield 5, which you know is going to have a long-term standing support in terms of not only small patches, but also DLC content, the addition of extra maps, guns, weapons, things like that. This game is going to have a long amount of support. It's got a long-term vision. So you're always going to see this game constantly get patched, retooled, and reworked. So to have a day one patch, it's not out of the norm, and it's very expected. But that just goes into the pros and cons of our modern games today, which is that because this is so commonplace, you now have a situation where almost every game is going to have a day one patch. Some developers genuinely use that for the good of their game, and some abuse the hell out of it. And that's the unfortunate part, is that more and more developers are abusing it, or at the very least leaning too heavily on it, which is that they want to get the game printed and shipped and sold to consumers, and they just think, okay, well, we'll fix everything later. But sure enough, the game comes out, doesn't sell all that well. Now all of a sudden you can't keep all the staff on to bug fix all these things that you were thinking, oh, well, we'll just keep staff around and bug fix the game after the fact. But now it's not selling that well. So it's kind of a double-edged sword, a rock and a hard place, but that's the kind of thing that we have to deal with today. Now, for our final news story, I really love this because this is the first time we've actually had some good concrete data regarding PlayStation Now. whenever we talk about PlayStation now, it always boils down to the same thing, which is that Sony doesn't talk about the subscribers, it doesn't talk about the revenue, so surely it can't be all that good. But this analyst company, Superdata, has released a good amount of data we can talk about from the Q3 earnings of subscription services. So if you can actually see this chart I'm showing you, PlayStation Now surprisingly has a majority stake in this particular market. So PlayStation Now is a 52% hold of the actual revenue that attributed to game subscription sales. And you can also see that EA Access is next, and then Xbox Game Pass is third. Now, when this data came out, you saw a lot of people discussing, wow, PlayStation Now is actually a lot more popular than I thought, or it's doing much better than we thought, or, oh my God, it has market leadership. That's crazy. Nobody really thought that or expected that because everybody doesn't like PlayStation Now, and nobody knows somebody that uses PlayStation Now, so this data came out as surprising. I immediately saw this and said, oh my God, what's the revenue? I looked at the revenue and I thought, yup, this is why Sony is not talking about this. Now, if you look at the actual first chart, it says $273 million of revenue between all those services. Let me tell you right now, $237 million in revenue is not a lot of money. And so when actually you account for the piece of pie that Sony has out of that, they made about $140 million in revenue in the third quarter from PlayStation Now. That is inordinately low compared to everything else in the games industry. So if you account for all of that $273 million, that's about 6% of the third quarter in terms of video game revenue from PC and console. That's a very, very extremely small amount. Of course, it's a lot of money to anybody, but for a multi-billion dollar company in a multi-billion dollar industry, it's quite small. This is why Sony doesn't talk about it. This is why Sony doesn't divulge subscriber numbers. Although the other interesting data that they released is that PlayStation Now subscribers, or just subscription-based users in general, typically spend more money. So on average, they're spending $25 on additional content like add-ons, season passes, cosmetic items, whereas somebody that traditionally buys title per title a la carte, they are spending about $10 on average on extra content. Which makes sense. Somebody that's willing to stream their video games or join a subscription service, they're probably a more hardcore user, quote unquote. So in conclusion, we were right. This is why Sony doesn't talk about it, because it's just not that big yet. And certainly they're still going to stick to it because they know this is something that could be much, much larger down the road. And that's what they're banking on, is that they want to have all these titles and services and the latency ready to go for when you see more and more people jump onto the service. I think the only surprising thing about this is that PlayStation Now does account for so much between all those services. I wouldn't have expected the 50% market share. I would have expected anywhere from 25-30%, maybe, if that. But you also got to figure that there's a lot of PlayStation 4s out there. So it's got market leadership. You are going to see a lot of PlayStation Now subscribers compared to Xbox Game Pass or EA Access. Now, with all that said, I think it's a good time to get into Let's Talk Plus, our weekly Let's Talk PlayStation giveaway, where one of you can win a $10 PlayStation Network code. I'd like to congratulate Jordan James Dalzell for winning this week's episode. I'm going to slide into those DMs on Twitter, and I'm going to send you your $10 code, so be on the lookout this weekend. If you would like to win a $10 PSN code, it's super easy. We do this every single week. Follow the link down below to the Gleam website. You can subscribe for an entry. You can follow on Twitter for an entry. You can retweet a tweet for an entry. Let me pay for your games. With that out of the way, those are all the news stories that I want to talk about with you guys from this past week. If you didn't see this Tuesday, PlayStation 4 Ultimate Tips and Tricks. As it stands right now, we're at like the semi-end of PS4's life cycle. I don't expect Sony to add major firmware updates to the PS4 in terms of new features or drastically changing the UI. I think what we're at right now is pretty much what we're going to have. So I did a major compilation of every single tip and new feature that Sony's done on PS4. I think that's a great video to start off for people that are just getting into PS4, or maybe even there are some tips and tricks that I think a lot of people maybe forget or don't realize that the PS4 can do. Check that video out. I suggest you send that to a friend that maybe just bought a PS4. It's certainly a good video to really start you off. But that's pretty much it. That's all I've got for you. So that concludes this week's episode of Let's Talk PlayStation. I'm Ryan Benecke. Thank you all so much for talking with me, and I will see you all next Friday.